All right. I wanted to, hey, welcome to Critical Q&A number 451, I think we are at here for this 5th of May in 2024. I wanted to check something real fast here and see, does it look like the sync is up to you, is up to speed with the audio? Does it look like it's in sync here? If it does, let me know, because I've noticed a couple times they seem just a little tiny bit off sync, and it might be a setting that I can do something about, but I wanted to experiment with that. Okay. All right. Seems okay. All right. Good. I'm going to tell you guys, it's a little disheartening to be like, hey, you know, I'm here, but if somebody else goes live, you know, bye. Why tell me that? Okay. You know, like, I'm here to answer questions. I'm here, and I hope that this show is interesting and informative enough that maybe it will be. I have no control over when other people go live. I will say that I 1,000% support Lindsay in her efforts and work and what she's doing. I think that she, I find her a very credible person. But, you know, let's just do a show. So, okay. In fact, let's go to the chat screen here, so we get that going. I am not 100% recovered. Let's go ahead and get the Q&A box going here. Please put your questions under this comment. I'd love to answer them. Okay, good. Start Q&A. There we go. Okay, good. So the question box is now up. I am looking at it. When I am looking here at what comments are coming up and stuff, I'm not seeing. I can see on the screen here, was she? Okay, maybe I'm being overly sensitive. And if I am, I will absolutely own that. It has been a day. 2 days, in fact. Wow. So, anyway, sorry if I'm, being whatever, truly, man, may you live in interesting times, huh? Whoa. Okay. Hey, welcome to your first live, Auntie. I'm glad you are here. I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. I'm not doing great. Physically, I am still recovering. I've got, I don't know if you can get a little bit of shiny stuff on my lips here. You know, when it rains, it pours, right? I'm down for a week sick, and 2 days, I think it was 2 days ago, I got back up and about and actually started getting, you know, some stuff done again. Cause I couldn't do anything. I'm telling you, it was crazy. I was trying so hard. I managed to carry out a consultation with someone by email, mostly during the week. And that was like, I felt like I was in a fever dream half the time. But man, you know, but otherwise, I wasn't really able to get much of anything done this last week. And that is so not me and so not how I run my life, that it was very, very disconcerting. And I talked about that on Friday. And I hope you guys will get a chance to check out the show on Friday, the Critical Conversation show called Getting Better, where I discussed, you know, some sort of psychological getting better as well as some physical. But I'm still recovering. My nose is still, you know, bleh, and my in here is still a little wheezy, you know, kind of stuff, but I've got energy again. And, the audio is ahead of the video, huh? Interesting. Let me try something. And this is just a setting. Let me see if this doesn't help. You guys tell me in a minute, does this make it worse or better if I do that? I feel like a optometrist. One or two. Tell me. Okay, and then somebody else says it seems perfectly synced up. Okay, good. Better. Oh, okay, good. All right. Yay. Okay, good. So it looks like two. Excellent. And made me louder. Okay, well, we can bring it down a little bit if that needs to come down a little bit. There we go. Yeah, good. Okay, good. So you guys, like I said, y'all let me know if there's any other issues during the show here. I've been trying to get, you know, every little setting. And when I added this ATEM Mini, I knew it was going to be kind of awesome because it gives me the ability to multi-cam, which I eventually want to be able to do some stuff with, especially when I get to back eventually to my news show. But getting everything all synced up and tied in and everything has been an adventure doing that. Okay. So, and if it's still, if it's too, let me see here. Actually, let me just check in on myself and see. Yeah, no, okay, that's good. That's good. All right, enough messing around with the audio. All right, good. So, I did not have to go to the doctor. Oh, that's a funny question. Okay, so let's go ahead and get around to answering questions here. Yeah, let's just get on with the business of answering questions. If I'm going to say this, since I talked about it on Friday, but some of y'all don't watch the Friday show, and that's fine. I wanted to share some good news, some good things that are happening in real work, in the real world, not YouTube drama and nonsense and name calling, but actual real world work. I got to, even in my weakened condition, on Friday, I got to do a presentation at an anti-MLM, multi-level marketing company, conference in Washington, D.C. Some of you know this because I talked about it on Friday. I'm not going to belabor the point, but I wanted to share this with you guys that the ex-cult world is not the only world where advocacy and work on this coercive control and culty behavior and people being taken advantage of. I mean, if you think Scientology is bad, when you dive into the world of multi-level marketing, you are diving into a multi-billion dollar industry worldwide, especially concentrated in the United States, that is a criminal operation the likes of which Scientology, you know, only has wet fever dreams about. I mean, we're talking about a massive amount of money. And the amount of cult tactics and cult in recruitment and in retention, keeping people involved with multi-level marketing schemes, there's a lot of money. Every single thing that I've ever said about cults and cult behavior and cult control applies 100% in that world. And so I was asked to give a presentation as part of a segment of MLM survivors, literally women, and the demographic is mostly women. And they had gotten together and there's this conference in Washington, D.C. every year, where they have been presenting as part of a two-day presentation of economists, sociologists, psychologists, like real professional people out there doing real professional work, real, you know, like published academics who study this stuff. And I got to present in the middle of all that. Actually, I was the last presenter on the second day as part of this, you know, here's the survivor stories and here's the psychology of this and here's how we can talk about this from a cult perspective. And I was so happy to see how much of the cult language and concepts and coercive control and those concepts were being already brought in to the conversations. And the people who were attending this conference were people like the deputy head of the Federal Trade Commission and the lawyers who work at the FTC, you know, like real serious people. So I was just pleased as punch to be able to present some of my ideas and concepts about cults to these people, all in the direction of what's happening here? Okay, I guess I missed a comment there from Angel Hugger. Connection's not going so good. I'm sorry. Everything seems pretty clear here on my end, so if there's anything I need to change, let me know. Okay. Anyway, so I wanted to lead with that, and just let you guys know that that was that it, that had happened, and I am very, very much looking forward to doing a lot more of that kind of work as time marches forward. That because that's what I consider to be the real serious work. You know, I don't really think of making YouTube videos as the be all end all of existence when it comes to bringing down, you know, cults or something. That's not how this is going to happen. You know, we're going to need to get legislators and congresspeople and lawmakers and public policy writers and those kind of people on our side. And we're going to have to get them on our side in a real big way. And right now they're not. I mean, let's if we're just being blunt, right, as well as law enforcement, they're definitely not on our side. So, I mean, I don't, not because I don't want them to be, it's just obvious, you know, the FBI has been accumulating information from former Scientologists for decades. What are they waiting for? You know? And the judges we can see in these cases when it comes to contract law are completely out to lunch, right? These guys are clueless when it comes to what cults are. So we got a lot of work to do in the real world, right? Getting real people who can really do stuff about this to act. And I think that's where the real game is. You know, after doing YouTube for 10 years, I can tell you this ain't how it's going to all be brought to its knees. This is public awareness. This is education. This is getting the word out there so that people like you all know how bad this stuff really is. But, you know, but we fall flat if you guys don't take what we give you and run with it and do more. You know, that's what we really need. Not that your viewership and support is not appreciated. Don't take me wrong. This isn't like, you know, you guys are all a bunch of scumbags. I don't mean that at all. I love you guys. Oh, do I? But boy, do we have a lot of work to do out in the real world to really make a difference. I think that's really what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of work to do. And we need your help to do it. We can't, us ex-members as a collective are a tiny number of people. Especially ex-Scientologists, right? Because Scientology itself is so tiny. You know, you can look to the ex-Mormon community. There's way more people there. That kind of thing. So, no, you're not, Joe. Okay, so anyway, so enough of that rambling. But I wanted to share some of those initial thoughts about this because I think that it's important that amidst all of the incredible amounts of noise that is being generated right now on other places in the sex Scientology space. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, good, because it's so much cacophony, right? It's just so much sound and fury that it's very distracting. And when there are personal attacks being lobbed against you, that's distracting. You know, and when they're coming against your friends and even all the way up to Leah, you're like, wait a minute. Okay. This whole thing has really lost the damn plot, right? And that's why I'm leading today with, look, let's talk about the actual fight because that's what we're all here for. We're not here for all that bullshit. We're here to get this work done. And I wanted to share with you guys, you know, an example of trying to get that work done by talking to the people who really matter. Government officials, stuff like that, people who can make a difference. And there's going to be more of that. Yes, there is. I definitely have plans. So we'll see where we can go with that. Okay. So now let's go ahead and, ooh, look at all this. Let's go ahead and get into your questions. I did not go to the doctor. Oh, I'm not, yeah, let me see where we put this here. Where are shame, blame, and regret on the tone scale, ex-Cyan asks. Well, let me see. One moment, please. If I can find out. If you'll just give me a moment and I will go to my little library here. All right, by the way, if y'all have not seen my tone scale video that I put out two months ago, I hope you will check it out. Because I got a chance to break down the Scientology tone scale in a way that very few people have. Oh, it's not in here. Ah, all right. Well, let's take a look at. I have the Scientology dictionary open up in front of me. It has a tone scale in it, but it's not in this PDF. But I'm going to now look up the word blame in the Scientology technical dictionary, and let's see what it says. Sure enough, there is a definition. It says here, blame is simply punishing other bodies. When one individual assigns cause to another entity, he delivers power to that entity. This assignment may be called blame, the arbitrary election of cause. And that's according to an old Dianetics Auditor's Bulletin. Blame is the negation of your responsibility. Yeah, that would be, that's classic Hubbard right there. Okay, well, anyway, that's it's a low-tone thing. When you ask where are blame, shame, and regret on the Scientology tone scale, the answer is they are way down, you know, maybe even in the negative band, if I'm remembering right. So that's what I can say about that. Just nasty, nasty ideas in Scientology. Beyond Jehovah's Witnesses asks, will you have Melissa with you so we can ask her questions? Well, I have her here on Friday for that sort of thing and for her and to include her in our conversations on Friday. She has helped me once or twice with the Q&A shows, if I remember right, a couple times. But generally speaking, she likes to have her Sundays off. And so I don't pressure her to come be part of this. So that's what's happening with that. Good question, though. Joe DiCeppa, did you say your new show is making a return? It will. Eventually, it will. I have, after this metering project is completed, and my plan is to complete it this week, then I've got another kind of project I'm going to be working on, and after that's done, then I'm going to be contemplating putting that new show back on. So it's still months away, but let's see. Let's see what happens. Okay, here's a good question, which I can answer without getting into any nonsense. It's a great question. Peace Dog asks, how can we stop the drama and infighting in the ex-Scientology community? I want to speak out, but don't want to contribute to causing any more drama. Any suggestions? Yeah, just shut it down. Just ignore it. Leave it alone. Don't give it oxygen. That's, you know, there's a thing called rabble-rousing. There are PR techniques, right, whether people are aware of them or not, that exist that people get up to in order to make a lot of noise and distraction and cause a lot of upset with people and get people really riled up and angry with each other. And there is effort right now, a lot of effort being exerted to make that happen. And so what's called FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. FUD. This is another PR term. It's a way that you generate disinterest in something. It's a way you get people exhausted with something. It's a way that you make people sick and tired of a subject. Is you make it so toxic, so difficult, so hard to understand, and so hard to navigate through that you just don't want to have anything to do with the whole space. And that's already happening. People are leaving in droves. I've seen it. People are leaving this entire space behind, right? They are turned off by the toxicity of it, as well they should be, right? Because that toxicity is, well, it's toxic. It's all about personality conflict and who did what to who and, you know, and let's fight each other. And this is confusing to people who come into this space or who have been in this space believing that, you know, ex-members are on the same page. We're not. And unfortunately, you know, there were a bunch of people who got together and did three seasons of a TV show, Scientology in the Aftermath, and who were given platforms, given voices, who did not have them, and then decided that, you know, a few years later, in order to continue to have relevancy or whatever, that they would, you know, become attackers and just make drama out of all of this. And that's not what this has ever been about, right? And it's really, really unfortunate. It's so, so unfortunate that this is what this space has turned into. So I've, you know, been like, nope. Not doing that. I am not doing that on this channel. And you've seen me just carry on with my work, right? Alex has as well. Jeff has as well. There are people out there who just don't get into this crap. And they keep doing the work. Support them. Support the people doing the work. When you see creators whose entire streamline and their content and everything that they're doing is attacking other people on YouTube or other people in the space. And like I said, now it's gone all the way up to Leah. And this concerted effort to take out Mike Rinder and all this other nonsense is just so much nonsense. So really, the best thing you can do to shut it down or leave it or make it go away is not contribute to it, ignore it, and support those of us who are trying to get the show on the road and get the real work done. I think, from my point of view, and of course this is just my point of view, as the guy who's been doing this all these years, I think it's obvious. I mean, I really struggle with understanding how people don't see this more clearly, more easily. It's so obvious who is fighting the fight and who is making it all about themselves and making it all about fighting other people. It's night and day, you know? So I don't understand why it is that people want that or go there or go in that direction, but I don't judge my value or the value of the work that gets done in this space by that. It's not views, it's not clicks, it's not likes, it's not numbers. It's about getting real people real help. Protesters who do that have my 100% support, by the way. And there are a number of them out there, right? But even that gets all nasty and vicious and personality driven. Even in the protest world, right? There's personalities who want to own the narrative, own the space, and put themselves forward as though they represent, their voice is the thing that represents all of it. And if there is one thing you will never hear me say, is that my voice, Chris Shelton, represents everybody who matters in the ex-Scientology space. Not once have I said that, or even tried to imply or infer such a thing. But the noisy, crazy-making, personality-driven drama stuff, it's all about me, 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 me. So just don't give that any oxygen at all. I don't want to. This is as far probably a field as I've gone into addressing it publicly here on my channel. And really, it's only because I'm so upset about, my friends being so ruthlessly attacked. It's bad enough when it was happening to me. And I was kind of like, okay, well, cost of being a public figure, got to roll with it. Here we go, right? I'm going to have a bunch of people come and give me a bunch of crap on my channel. And they do, I get commenters coming and people who don't know me, never watched a word I've had to say, and absolutely positive I'm some scumbag, lowlife, horrible person, and they don't know a thing about me. Okay. Life of a public figure. I roll with it, right? But then I have to watch that happen to my friends too, and then, it's just, it hurts. And so I have to say that much about it at least. About all I could say, about all that. That's my best advice, right? And again, if you have no idea what I'm talking about, great. Continue. Okay. Let's carry on here. X sign. Did you hear that real estate investor Daniel Ikajevs sold his entire Clearwater portfolio for $58 million to developer Moises Agami, a known parishioner of the Church of Scientology, last month. I did hear about that. Just another step. And apparently that was right after the election, right, that went down, or was revealed at least, after Mark Bunker lost. I am beyond disappointed in Clearwater as a city, the city council, the government there. They continue to play footsies with Scientology for reasons that are beyond my understanding. For, what do we got? 80s, 90s, 2000. Is it 50 years? In the early 1980s, just a couple years after Scientology invaded Clearwater. And I used invaded advisedly, the L. Ron Hubbard, when he was still alive, directed that the Sea Org is going to go to land. They were out on boats and they came across the ocean and they landed in Clearwater, Florida by design. Hubbard chose that place and he wrote Project Normandy. Let's invade this town and take it over. And they proceeded to do so. And L. Ron Hubbard was found out, and he went into hiding, and, you know, a bunch of stuff happened, and the FBI raid and all that. But the Project Normandy directives, the entire purpose of that activity was to take over the entire city. And by taking it over, establish a permanent foothold in a community which they could then build from. This is not dissimilar to the Mormons taking over Utah as a state. It's a similar strategy. Parallels have been drawn by other people, and I, you know, and I was like, yeah, that's a really accurate way of looking at that. Clearwater is in denial about this. The Clearwater government seems to be in some kind of adamant denial, even after, you know, Bunker was there for what, 2 or 4 years or something on the city council, flat out telling them in the 19, okay, so just the history in the 19, where I started with this was in the 1980s, L. Ron Hubbard Jr. and Paulette Cooper and a bunch of people who knew what they were talking about went to the Clearwater City Council. There's video on YouTube. You can find this and dig it up. And testified in front of them just a couple years after Scientology started establishing its foothold there and told them exactly what the Scientologists were doing. Well, apparently, you know, according to the framework of Florida government and city officials there, if Scientology wants to buy out the city and own it, there's nothing we can do about it. And that's been the party line for the last 50 years, right? Because we're talking about the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s. Now we're into the 2020s. So 40-something years, Scientology's been getting away with this. No one ever just says, no, stop. You don't get to do this. You don't get to ruin our town. Nah. Yeah, they're ruining it. And as far as I can tell, they're getting away with it. Right? I'm pretty bitter about the whole thing for obvious reasons. You know, it pisses me off. So that's where I, you know, kind of, yeah, exactly. I lose my patience, right, with this city. It's not like they haven't been told over and over and over and over again. So this is just the latest step, real estate acquisition by Agami and all of that. This is just, you know, the latest step in the puzzle, you could say, of putting the pieces in place where Miscavige is sort of taking a page from the Mormon church, right? It's all about real estate valuation, getting money based on that, and power and influence. And it's about, you know, just playing the long game. Right, is we may not respect you, Scientology, but if you're around long enough, then people will start calling you legit out of sheer ignorance and stupidity, because that's how people are, to be blunt. Right? Oh, well, the Mormons have been around for, you know, 200 years, must be a legit religion. No, they're not. They're a destructive cult, right? And they happen to own an entire state of this country. And the wall between church and state in Utah doesn't exist. It's a fantasy that it does, right? There is no separation of church and state in Utah. And that's where Scientology is dying to go, right? And they know if they just hunker down and keep going, and somehow they'll, you know, play that long game. That's kind of how I look at it. And I think that until somebody steps up and stops them, you know, that's how the Mormons are going to keep going. You know, hundreds of billions of dollars they have. And then there's the pipsqueak mini-me of that, which is Scientology. It's an apt It's an apt comparison. Okay. Let's carry on here. okay. So, Xion. I do not. Xion asks a really fun question. A friend I know is driving to Loveland next week and have been to the usual places. Any suggestions for new places to go? I don't know Loveland at all. I don't. I'm sorry. I don't have an answer to that one. Joe DiCeppo, I think Michelle Carpenter was involved with an MLM. Maybe LuLaRue might be someone worth interviewing if you were wanting to cover that. Thank you, Joe. Michelle Carpenter was actually one of the organizers of the DC conference. And I am definitely in touch with Michelle. She and Roberta Blevins and I have been in touch about doing some future podcast content about multi-level marketing. So yes, I'm on it. Thank you. Very good suggestion. Oh, Jono, I'm going to have to claim ignorance on this one. I have been keeping... Jono Nolan asks, what do you think of El Salvador's president, Nayib Bukele? He seems to have a bit of a cult following from people all over the world. Probably true. I don't know the man. There are only so many of these things I can keep my finger on the pulse of right now, and El Salvador ain't one of them. So unfortunately, I can't speak intelligently to that at all. Sorry, I'm just not, just kind of out of my, you know... vision right now. Yeah, no, I have not seen the Betting on Zero documentary about Herbalife. No. Okay, here's a question that I can answer. Is coercive control always part of domestic violence in relationships? No, I'm going to say that it's not always, but I am going to say a vast majority of the time it would be involved. The reason I'm going to say no, not always, is because you can have impulse violence. You can have sort of reactionary violence that is not on the part of males and females. Mostly males, statistically speaking, by far. But it's not like there are not, you know, violent women who get up to violence. And that doesn't necessarily have to involve, if it's impulsive or, you know, sort of momentary, like in the moment kind of thing, right, where, you know, somebody just loses their damn mind. It's not okay. I'm not, you know, just because it's not necessarily a repeating pattern of coercive abusive behavior doesn't mean it's okay. You know, obviously, I am not a proponent of domestic violence in any form. But they don't. But it's not always tied with a repeating pattern of abuse and gaslighting and sort of all the other sort of stuff that we see with coercive behavior, where they're controlling the finances or the social networks of their domestic partner. So, no, not always. But I will go on record as saying the vast majority of time the two things go hand in hand. The interesting thing about about coercive control is that it doesn't require physical violence in order for it to be a continuing pattern of repeating pattern of abusive behavior. You can engage in coercive control without ever touching someone. But just because you become violent with someone doesn't mean you're coercively controlling them. These are two separate concepts which are often but not always joined at the hip. Okay. Xion, do you believe in any adage or precept you learn in Scientology? I do. There is one that I have maintained for a long time. When in doubt, communicate. I think it served me well. Communication is the universal solvent. Communication will dissolve all things. That's bullshit. I used to think those things were true, but they're not. Sometimes communication makes things worse. Sometimes in certain circumstances you can try and it just doesn't go anywhere. And I've learned that the hard way with some of my enemies out there, where I've tried to reach out and make peace or you know, settle things or settle some misunderstandings or something, and it goes absolutely nowhere. If somebody is determined to hate you, there is nothing you can do about it. But you can try to communicate. And And so for me, when in doubt, communicate. Now, once I've established that there is no doubt and this person's gonna hate me no matter what I do, right? Then there's no doubt anymore, right? No bothering trying to communicate anymore. But if you can break through, if you can mend those bridges, if you can fix those situations, I think it's worth trying. Okay. So there you go. Fluffy Wickets. Okay. Yeah. So this is a great question. What's the technical difference between multi-level marketing and pyramid schemes that keep multi-level marketing legal? There isn't one. Okay. The things that keep them legal is that they have, this is all according to my understanding from what I've, from the amount that I have read and talked with people who are true experts on the subject of multi-level marketing. I do not claim to be a full expert on this, but I know more than your average bear. And so what I can tell you here is that the law has carved out specific exceptions for multi-level marketing companies. The amount of money that these people have and the lobbying efforts that they have engaged in and the way that they have hired former FTC, Federal Trade Commission staff. You know, if you saw that movie years ago called The Big Short, it highlighted in one scene how one of the ways that the housing market went out of control was that people who were part of the regulatory bodies for the housing market got hired by the companies who undermine the whole thing, and they will undermine the expertise of these people by corrupting them. Money, right? And to them, at the individual level, here's this person working their guts out at the FTC, trying to formulate laws and all this kind of stuff to take down MLMs. And then they get, hey, shiny thing. How'd you like all this money? How'd you like some vacations? How'd you like some perks, right? And the guy's like, I'm working my ass off here at a government job, not getting anywhere. Why don't I go get paid for once, right? Why don't I go have some of that high life? Why don't I get a taste? And off they go. And then goes another one, and another one, and another one. That's how it happens. And they get these people over on the dark side, and then they're writing all of the bills and the lobbying efforts and the laws that get pushed through so that there's an actual law. And I can't brief you in detail on it because I only heard this in passing during the conference. But, there was this anti-pyramid scheme. I think it was called tear down the pyramid schemes or something, right? But it actually, the language of the law was such that the tear down the pyramid scheme law actually enabled the pyramid schemes, enabled the multi-level marketing schemes. It was backwards world. It was opposite world that day in Washington, D.C. when that law got passed. And those laws back up the MLMs. And we're talking about, anyway, like I said, I can't say it enough. We're talking about a lot of money. So anyway, so it's bad, right? It's really bad. You can hear my nose. getting a little out of control here. Okay, we'll carry on. Okay, here's an interesting question. Did I ask you, what's your take on stoicism? Are there stoic churches or communities? Tell me more about the secular hub. Okay, well, you know what? Let's just go ahead and take a look at this for a second. Now, stoicism is defined as the endurance of pain or hardship, right? Just as a regular word. But an ancient Greek school of philosophy founded by Zeno, the school taught that virtue, the highest good, is based on knowledge. The wise live in harmony with the divine reason, also identified with fate and providence, that governs nature and are indifferent to the vicissitudes of fortune and to pleasure and pain. Okay. Sounds a little bit like a sort of, we talked the other day about radical acceptance. Somebody mentioned that in the Sorry if I read that wrong. It was Zeno, Z-E-N-O, was who, the founder of this philosophy school. We talked the other night about that. There are Stoic groups. I've seen videos on YouTube pushing Stoicism as a philosophy, and I know that there are groups who get behind that. It sounds a little bit like radical acceptance a little bit, right? Like, but not or related in some fashion. I'm not a deep Greek philosophy guy, so I only have, you know, sort of surface level understandings of a lot of that stuff. I'd like to know more. I'm just being honest with you guys. I'm trying to not come across like I know more than I do, because I don't want to present that way. I've always thought of the Stoics as kind of like, why, right? Like, enjoy life. At least try to get some fun out of it while you're along for the ride. You're only going to get one go. Make it, you know, live the best life you can. And I guess, you know, I've always thought of the Stoics as these people are just, well, I'm just going to deal with it or something. I don't know. I'm probably grossly misunderstanding where they're really coming from. Yeah, you know. Oh, is there some kind of nonsense going on here from a McRamble? Yeah, let's not do that here, okay? Let's not do that for the Q&A show here. I don't want to have to jump back into the chat and start throwing people out, trying to forward more drama on my channel. This is a drama-free zone here, guys. I'm not into having comment wars about, you know, what other creators are accusing Mike Rinder of. You know, there are other places and other forums for those conversations to happen. They don't have to happen here. Okay, so Stoicism. So as far as the secular hub goes, yeah, totally get it, McRamble. Just let's just not do that here today, okay? That's all. That's all I'm asking. Thank you. A lot of the other channels really, you know, they have mods and they mod for each other and all that. I don't do that. So hopefully we can just all play nice here. I like to have a channel that's more mature than that. And I really, really appreciate you guys for helping me maintain that. Okay. So, the secular hub, to finish answering your question, is an atheist secular group. They're not all atheists, but there are humanists. There are people who are kind of done with religion, kind of over it, kind of recovering from it even. There's a recovering from religion group that meets under the, you know, the roof of the secular hub, things like that, right? So it's a very different thing from a Stoic group. Although you definitely will have people at the hub who could probably talk a lot more intelligently about Stoicism than I can. That's for sure. Okay, let's carry on here. Here's an interesting question. X-Cyan, are all SPs on the same place on the tone scale? No, they're not. The idea of the suppressive person in Scientology is that they either tend to be like angry, destructive, rah, raging kind of people, or much more often they are covert hostility, right? The 1.1 band, the most dangerous band of the tone scale, Hubbard says, is this 1.1 band, covert hostility, where it's the guy who's smiling and putting out his hand, but behind his back he's got the knife, right? And he's just waiting to give it to you in the neck. That's your suppressive person, your antisocial personality, your bad guy. So that's what we normally thought of SPs as if it came to emotions. But SPs have a full range of emotions just like any other person does. They can grieve, they can be sad, they can be mad, they can be happy and elated and all that too, just like anybody else. So that's fine. All right.
Good. So, see, that's the thing, right? McRamble On comes here like, okay, so here's all these people finding their voice. Okay, then they can go have a voice. Like, okay, well, I'm going to leave. Well, then you're not here to learn anything. You're here to ramble in my comment section. So please do go away, because that's not what we're here for. Okay, just as a point there, you know, this is like, if people have a voice and are finding it, knock yourself out. Go have a voice. But don't bring your lies and nonsense to me, right? Tearing down Leah Remini and Mike Rinder is not finding your voice. It's being a fucking asshole. So if you gotta learn something, I have a lot to offer, and that's what I'm trying to do here. I'm not here to, you know, McRamble On about other creators. And I'm certainly not here to tear down Mike Rinder. You can take that and definitely go away. Because that is not what I'm ever going to be about here. Okay. Leslie Bishop asks, Chris, is there any way we can see the presentation you made for the conference in D.C.? Yes, there is. In a couple of weeks, apparently, it will go live. All the stuff that was put out there apparently is going to go live somewhere, are going to be available. As soon as I have that link, I will get it out to you guys so you can see it. It was a fun little talk. It went in for about 20 minutes or so, and we talked some of, I dropped a couple of lines about it and some of what we talked about on Friday as well. Yes, I did hear about that. We discussed that. Let me see what other questions we have here. Apostate Alex is in the chat. Just, Alex, if you want to ask me questions, you got to throw them in the question box. But since I see you here, and since you're Alex, I'm my friend, are you recording your talk next weekend? I am not. I am going to be giving my talk in Portland next weekend, and I will not be recording it. Out of respect for the people who are attending the conference, it's for them more than it's for anybody else. But I think, Alex, you'll be there, and I think you'll see that what I'll be talking about is the beginning of a ramp up toward this next project I'm working on. So it should be fun. It should be interesting, and I am looking forward to it. Good question. OBG Foster asks here, if everything is your own fault, how can interpolation be a thing? Okay, yeah, let's talk about this for a second. So this is a Scientology question where, in Scientology, the responsibility concept is that you are always responsible for everything that happens to you in an ultimate sense. In a, you know, you pulled it in, you've done bad things, or you've done stuff that if you're having negative stuff happen to you or bad things happen to you, it's because you've opened yourself up to that. But then there's this idea of interpolation, right? Which is where people are upsetting you. But the difference is that interpolation is kind of coming from N theta. Interpolated theta, that's what interpolation comes from, this concept of interpolating, of making a turbulence, creating a turbulence. That turbulence is being created in your theta, in your life energy, right? You're all, and it's all spinny and out of control. That's coming from a suppressive person, ultimately. And suppressive people spread lies and discontent and rumors and things to upset you. And this is called N theta, interpolated theta. That's the product of interpolation, is to generate, create out of nothing, create chaos, create N theta. So that's kind of the difference, is that N theta is generated on purpose by suppressive people to take out or interpolate or upset good people, well-intentioned people. And that would be your differentiation line there if I was going to have to explain it kind of, you know, logically. I mean, the, you know, these are Scientology constructs, so they're a little silly. There's not really interbulation, but there are certainly people who get into, you know, feeling turmoil or feeling upset. And the difference is that it's not just your fault there, because the SP is going out of their way to generate that interbulation. And SPs are not, you know, they're there. They're real. They're all over. Even Tom Cruise acknowledges them. So that's how that could be a thing. Okay, good. Probably over-explaining. Oh, what a nice saying here. Exion, Irish blessing. May the dreams you hold, dearest, be those which come true. And the kindness you spread keep returning to you. That's great. That's a great blessing. Thank you. Okay, I'll answer this one. Okay, so Fabian asks, do you agree that we are seeing the next LRH being made in the anti-Scientology community? Reminds me of Nietzsche's phrase about fighting a monster, you become one. Let me say this, okay? Because I don't think that's what's happening. And I don't give this that much staying power or credibility. Cults of personality exist. We've talked about this. I've done whole shows about it. You can find a Friday show about cults of personality from me a couple months ago. They're a thing. And destructive cults and cults of personality are two different things. You can build them up. And a cult of personality doesn't have to be destructive, doesn't have to be used for evil, doesn't have to be used for, you know, fomenting lies and disarray and chaos and stuff like that. But it sure can be. Right, we sort of see it all the time. Alex Jones is a great example of that. David Icke is a great example of that. Right, these classic conspiracy theory guys have cults of personality built up around them. People follow Alex Jones because they think Alex Jones is the man. He's the guy. He's the truth teller. He's the guy who we get the secret sauce from, and nobody else could possibly know as much as Alex Jones, right? And he's our thought leader, and he's the guy who tells us what to think and how to act. And that's a cult of personality. These are built up on the internet all the time. That's what YouTube channels are all about. And especially the drama-driven ones, because it's all about conflict and, you know, and getting those emotions engaged. Carl Sagan never built up a cult of personality. Educators, people, who inform, people who are trying to get work done, they're not building up cults of personality. But these cult-like followings happen. They happen all the time. They're all over YouTube. All over YouTube. So when you have a trauma community, and I've made this point many times before, and I'll just keep making it because it's a valid point and it needs to be made. When you're bringing drama into a trauma community, right? When you're bringing drama, D-R-A-M-A, into a trauma, T-R-A-U-M-A, community, you are doing one of the biggest disservices to those people that you could possibly do. Because you also attract a whole nother wave of people who are not part of the trauma community, who are there for the drama. They're there for the conflict, the internecine conflict, the battles, the personality clashes and the wars and who's right and who's wrong and all of that. That's the opposite of healing. It's destroying. It's taking. It's tearing apart, not building up. And it's a concentrated effort to do so. And, I posted on my community tab this week about the ego fest of this, right? It's about building up egos rather than building up people. And healing from a traumatic experience. Healing requires understanding, compassion, support, understanding. It doesn't require drama and tearing people down. So it actually goes against the entire point of what the community is there for, and that's the source of so much of the conflict that gets generated. It just doesn't belong in the space. You know, if you want that kind of thing, you go to those spaces where that's what they're built for. Celebrity media is a great example. TMZ, That's not a healing space. Nobody's going to TMZ to learn interesting things. People go to TMZ for conflict, right? Who's hates who? Who's all over who? Right? Who's in a relationship with who? Who broke up with who? Drama. When I see, it seems so obvious to me. I've never felt the need to really define this term, but this is what I'm talking about, right? And this is not what healing trauma communities are about. So it's oil and water. Let's put it that way. It's oil and water, and you can try for a period of time to do that. It's not going to work out, and it's not working out, you know, because people like me, you know, or others who are here in this space to try to educate, inform, and help heal people. Resist that. They're not interested in that. You guys aren't. You know, that's why you're here. So, you know, so that's, and if you have, and then the other half of this equation is that because it's a trauma community, trauma by its nature, because of what it does to us emotionally and to our ability to think and our thinking, how we think, what we think, you know, where we go. The psychology of trauma is complicated, and it can create a lot of triggers. It can create a lot of responses, trauma responses. And that can generate an awful lot of drama if someone's interested in fomenting drama. Oh, look at this, and look at this. Instead of trying to bring some healing, they get, oh, no, let's blow this up. Let's blow up these conflicts. That's a very, very clear-cut sign that someone doesn't get what this is all about. And in fact, is trying to use this space for something very different than what it should be for. And when I use the word should, I'm bringing a word into that, right? What it should be. Well, this is my opinion of what it should be. Oddly enough, I think helping people and healing from all of this Scientology crap is a good thing to do. Apparently, I'm in the minority. And that's why I'm so sad these days about that, right? But doesn't stop me from continuing to do the best I know how to do to do this. So that's what I see happening here, right? Is people who want to heal, want to get past this, want to improve themselves and understand themselves better, they don't go into that stuff. So Fabian Andil says, I guess in follow-up to that last question, isn't it similar to LRH and any other narcissists leaving a trail of former associates behind who say all the same things? Yes, that's exactly what it's like. Burned bridges. Every one of them. Nuclear explosion, right? Disintegrated bridges, not just burned. That's the pattern of a narcissist. Okay, Polar Vortex. If one buys a membership to your channel, does that help you? Does YouTube take a cut? Yes, it helps me. And yes, I would encourage you to buy a membership on my channel. What would help me a lot more is if you signed up with Patreon. That's the number one key foundational support for me and my work would be through Patreon or through, you know, donations through PayPal, Venmo, stuff like that. Buy me a coffee. You know, I've got links below to all of those things. Okay, let's carry on here. Move on to something different. Yeah, I think we're good now on that whole McRamble thing. Oh, okay, great. Here's a great question. Here's questions I love answering. Master Bachelor, in one of your videos, you've mentioned that the OT info security measures would put Fort Knox to shame. What would be some of the examples of such advanced measures? Let me tell you. When they set up the confidential OT classrooms at the Advanced Org of Los Angeles, one of the big blue buildings, they set it up so that You get, when you go into an OT course room, like the OT3 course room, you're gonna start OT3. They don't just hand you an e-meter and a piece of paper and say, go have at it. You have to learn how to do the procedure of OT3. And it's different from what you did on OT2 and OT1. Those were whole different things. So now you're going to learn all about Xenu. Well, you're going to be given a pack of, it's a binder, and it's got copies in it of L. Ron Hubbard's handwritten tale of Xenu. And it's got bulletins, and it's got Keeping Scientology Working in it. It's got a whole, it's a whole course pack you have to do. And you're going to have to read that whole thing, and you're going to have to understand it all, and then you're going to have to go practice the procedure, and then you're going to go do it. Well, in order to give you that course pack, you have to first get authorized all the way through RTC. They give you an ID card. It's a plastic laminated card that which goes on a lanyard that you wear around your neck. And if you don't have that card, you ain't getting into the OT course rooms at all. There's a big two double doors, big heavy wood doors, right, with a card reader. You got to get through there. You got to get into the down the hall to the course room. There's another card reader to get into the course room because, you know, you can get into that area, but you can't get into the course room, right? Because and there's multiple course rooms. You get into the OT3 course room, and there's tables, and there's a locked cabinet. Big, heavy metal, as I understand it, I think it's metal, cabinet, like safe. And the course packs are kept inside that safe or that security cabinet. And they have welded to the course pack is a steel cord or a cable, and it's plugged in the safe to a system that is monitoring which course pack is plugged into which outlet. They're all numbered. So you're going to get assigned course pack number 5. So you go over to the cabinet, and there's number 5, and you pull it down off the shelf, and you unplug it from the wall. You have 10 seconds to get over to your table and plug it into the table. And if you don't plug it into the table, the alarms are going to go off. Now, you take it over there, and you sit down, and you read your pack for that period, and then you're going to go off to lunch, or you're going to go have a break. You got to unplug it, walk it over to that cabinet, plug it back in, turn it in, close the doors, everything's all sealed up. They don't open the door to the course room and open the door to that cabinet where the course packs are at the same time. It's physically impossible for those two doors to be open at the same time. Now, things might have changed in the last 20 years since this all was put in place. But this is how it was when I was there, okay? So what I mean when I say the alarms all go off is I don't just mean a little buzzer goes off in that room. If that course pack doesn't make it to its plug so that the security loop is all in place, then the system assumes you're trying to take off with that thing. Every door between you and the outside is locked down. The alarms go off. Security is alerted from across the street. They come running. The entire building, every floor, is locked down. The elevator stops working. The entire building shuts down, basically, until security comes and sorts out what the hell is going on. All because you didn't make it to plug it in within that 10-second window, right? That's the security of the OT materials at AOLA. And I understand that it's a similar system over at FLAG. You are not ever, ever going to get away with walking out of that building with one of those course packs. Good luck trying. Excuse me. And that's just what I know about, right? There's probably more, but there you go. Oh my God. This is a funny one. Let's do this one. Since it's going around social media, would you prefer to be in the woods alone with a man or a bear? Or perhaps the same question for a woman in your life. Yeah, this is a funny one. Only because we seem to see two basic dumbass responses out of this, which is men who want to mansplain bears to women. Or men who don't seem to kind of get the point, right? Which is that, you know, a strange man is more of a threat to a woman than a bear. And that's not to say that bears aren't dangerous or that women don't understand that bears are dangerous. But, you know, strange men are actually potentially worse. And the way I see it is because men can coercively control you. Men can sweet talk you. Men can present one face and not be that. They can be something else. They can be a wolf in disguise, right? They can be a snake. They can be all kinds of animals, all deadly and horrible and toxic and poisonous to you, right? Men can be that. And that doesn't mean all men are that, but they can be. And if you don't know the man, what do you know, right? I mean, this is all, you know, anyway, like I said, I don't even want to get into mansplaining the whole thing. I'm sure all you guys are already sick of it, but it is a funny question. And it made sense to me immediately. I was like, oh, I get this. So, yeah. I mean, I'm a man, so I'm not a woman. I can't answer as a woman. As a man, I'd rather, you know, be dealing with a strange man in the woods than a bear. I'll tell you that straight off, because because at least the strange man has a chance of being there to help me, and maybe we can cooperate. Maybe we can work together, get the hell out of the woods, right? If we're stuck there or something. Or we can get together and fight the bear, because if a bear shows up, because I'll tell you what, I never, ever, ever want to go one-on-one with a bear. I saw that movie. I ain't doing that. All right, let's see what else we got here. We got a few more questions in the box here, and we're an hour long, so I want to wrap this up fairly soon. So let's carry on here. RoboTube1, regarding multi-level marketing, I love the MLM questions today. Thanks, guys. Some are viewed as less bad, mostly down to the products purveyed. Do you subscribe to this view? Spoiler, I don't. No, I don't. I don't at all. That's like asking me which cult is better or worse, right? They're all bad. I mean, they just are. Every single MLM, as far as I can tell, is a destructive cult. And there is no such thing as a good cult when it comes to destructive cults. There's no good destructive cult or, you know, less bad because of their product line. The product line of an MLM is ancillary to what it's actually doing. You're the product of multi-level marketing. You're the product. You, right? You as a salesperson, you as somebody who is giving money to the corporation. That's how it really works. It's not about selling cleaning products or perfumes or, you know, energy drinks or something. That those products are not what they're about. They're about selling you on selling and getting your friends and social networks involved and getting them selling and getting more people selling. And it's a system that is designed to screw you. That's what people seem to have a hard time getting their wits around. I don't know why. It boggles me that there are people who seem to really struggle with this. I really don't understand it. It's so clear cut. It's such an easy statement to make. It's such an observably, objectively provable fact that not one multi-level marketing company's economic scheme works to get you money. The system is designed to screw you. And there's no outsmarting it. It doesn't work that way. You're not going to think your way through to success in an MLM. The entire system is there to screw you. Some people have a real hard time accepting that, you know, but they sound so sincere. They said, screw all that. It doesn't matter what they said. Look at the numbers, right? When you're looking at multi-level marketing, the numbers never, ever add up in your favor. Okay. So. Have I used the Internet Infidel site? It's basically an online library. I have not, but now I'm curious. I'm definitely going to check that out. Yes, George Smiley. Do Scientologists consider shyness and introversion to be afflictions to be conquered by the tech? Yes, they do. Introversion, shyness, withdrawn, not being willing to communicate, not being an extroverted personality are all considered negative or bad personality traits in Scientology. Yes, definitely the case. Let me think about this one. Robert Tobias, what was the most emotionally upsetting film that you ever viewed? I don't think... The first thing that's coming to my mind is Schindler's List, but I don't think that's the answer. I'm trying to remember. Oh, no, it was Threads. Let me make sure I've got the name right on that one. Yep, this is it, Threads. You can find a Wikipedia page on this. It's a 1984 British-Australian apocalyptic war drama television film produced by the BBC and some others. It's a dramatic account of nuclear war and its effects in Britain, specifically on the city of Sheffield in northern England. The plot centers on two families as a confrontation between the U.S. and Soviet Union erupts. As the nuclear exchange between NATO and the Warsaw Pact begins, the film depicts the medical, economic, social, and environmental consequences of nuclear war. I have never seen a harder-hitting film when it came to the consequences and ultimate tragic results of nuclear war and war in general. I'm sure there may have been other films or work that have been as emotionally disturbing or horrifying as Threads was, but I've never been hit as hard. The ending of that thing, I wanted to go. I mean, it was bad. I really felt awful. I was going to say something worse, but I was really just kind of a whatever. It was bad. Yeah, that really hit me hard in the gut. So that's my answer to that one. Not a pleasant answer, but not a pleasant one there, yeah. OBG Foster asks, when you describe the Church of Scientology to experts who know about other cults, which facts surprise or shock them? Generally, at this point, I hope this isn't a cop-out answer, but... Generally speaking, I've never had to describe Scientology to people who know about cults because they already know about Scientology. Scientology is infamous in the ex-cult space. Everybody knows about Scientology, and with good reason, right? We've popularized and made people well aware of it. There have not been as many successful documentaries and shows about other cults as there has been about Scientology. When you have Emmy award-winning, Scientology in the Aftermath, and, Alex Gibney's Lawrence Wright's Going Clear, Scientology in the Prism of Belief, these were huge. Millions and millions of people watch these. But Scientology has been known, infamously known, in cult circles for decades because of their litigious nature and the nature of the abuses they get up to. If anything surprises people, it's learning more about the Sea Org and learning about Sea Org kids and learning about the child abuse and the fairly, I don't know if I want to use that word. Let's just say the well-known, well-understood instances of child SA and things like that are known about or have been talked about when it comes to Scientology. Sometimes, like the four-year-old in the chain locker, that whole story. Sometimes they don't know those kind of details, and those kind of things tend to be fairly, oh my God. But I'll tell you a little secret here, is that the other cults are kind of get up to the same crap. right? It's not like Scientology has cornered the market on awful when it comes to how they treat kids or women or sex, you know, sexual criminal behavior, etc. All these cults are up to this stuff. Really nasty stuff. That's the really, really, really dark side of this. So, yeah. Okay. Let's see about wrapping up here. We're coming up on the tail end. George Smiley, how many times do you think you've read Keeping Scientology Working? Realistically, probably about 250, 300 times. Something like that. Over all those years. Like full on, you know, cover to cover, right? All seven pages. Okay. Joe DiCeppo asked a great question. When some people managed to smuggle out and leak OT3, was that before the security features you described were put in place? Yes, that's exactly how they did it. The way the materials were initially leaked was actually they were taken out of, I believe it was Copenhagen, Denmark. A couple of ex-Sea Org members who had left still had their uniforms. This was in the 1980s. Walked into the advanced organization pretending to be RTC missionaries. And they said they needed their OT materials for review and correction, and the staff at the advanced org gave it to them. They gave them all the packs, and they walked out. And I believe one of them, at least, was prosecuted criminally for that. I mean, it is, you know, theft. But that's how they leaked. That's how some of it got out. And I think there were court cases where stuff was also leaked from, but that happened. That whole thing I just said, that actually occurred. And yeah, it was actually pretty funny. Yeah, AOSHNDK, yeah. So that's how that happened. And that's one of the reasons why they got the security system so put in place that you can't walk out of the building with those materials. You just, good luck. Okay, and somebody asks here, Young Matador, have you seen the Betting on Zero documentary about the Herbalife MLM? Flouted the rules of the founder, flouted the rules of his own organization's alcohol and drug abuse. I have not seen that documentary, but it's hardly a surprise to find out that, you know, predatory people act predatory and, you know, go about flaunting the rules. That's what predators do. They don't care about rules. They don't care about decorum. They don't care about manners, etiquette. They don't care about other people. You know, you're dealing with people who are so involved with themselves that they don't have any room in their head for anybody else. I can't think of a worse life to have than to be so stuck on yourself that you can't think about anybody else. I'm overly empathetic, though, right? I know I am. Sometimes I'm pathologically so. But I'd rather be that than be pathologically narcissistic and self-centered. Ugh, God, what a horrible life that would be. Oh, this is a funny one. Joe DiCeppo asks, how many of the rat hole devotees, that hole that looks like a rat in the ground and there's these people following this, how many of the rat hole devotees are taking it seriously and how many are just in it for the meme? And could it be seen as a parody of internet cults or just a parody of religion in general? All the above, Joe. And probably more people are hooked up with that or connected with that out of curiosity and the thrill and the fun of it and the goofiness of it than they are really seriously going down the rat hole of belief, right? I doubt very, very many people are doing that, but there are some mentally unhinged people are a dime a dozen out there, and people who are willing to go all in on the significance and religious overtones of a hole in the ground that looks like a rat is, you know, you wouldn't think, but, you know, radical acceptance. People are what they are. Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Okay, and finally, last question here from Joe. Does Scientology have a concept of abuse purifying victims like other cults? Now, that's a good question. Let me think about that for a second. Inadvertently, kind of in a way they do. See, when you're in trouble in Scientology and you get assigned to scrubbing the toilets with a toothbrush or doing the hard physical labor, or you got to go do that stuff, the reason that you're told that you need to go do that is because you need to get your head clear. You need to get disinterbulated. You're all interbulated right now. You're out of present time. You're flooded with pictures of past events. You're re-stimulated, and that's why you're acting out your evil impulses or acting out your reactive impulses and being such a dick right now, right? This is Scientology. Scientologist speaking to, you know, somebody, right? So you're going to go get assigned this work. You're going to go wash windows or scrub toilets or whatever the hell it is you're going to do. You're going to go do this punishment. But it's not just punishment for punishment's sake. It's to get your head out of your ass. It's to get clear of all that crap that you've dragged in, all that reactive mind stuff, so that you are kind of looking at things clearly again. That is a purge-like, purifying-like concept, but not a direct one, if you get my point, right? You got to go do this work and come to present time. And if you were seeing things clearly in present time, then you wouldn't be doing and saying all this nasty, horrible, critical stuff about the church, right? Because you'd see clearly what's going on. So, so it's that kind of thing, right? That's kind of how that works. And that's kind of how that works. Okay, and we are hour 20 into this thing, so I think we're going to look at wrapping up, only because I have to, in a half hour, I have to shoot with Tony, and then I got other work I got to do today, and it's just kind of a day. Sundays are kind of a working day for me, really. So that's kind of where we're at here. Oh, let me turn that question off. Okay. So... yeah, there you go. Purification rundowns, all kinds of abusive. Yes, I will definitely do that. Okay, so let's go ahead and let's wrap up. Let me see if there's anything else I need to be... Ooh, I've been getting messages and stuff while we've been recording. Oh, so much fun to look forward to today. It's been a time. Thank you very much, guys, for coming around and listening to me blabber on about all this stuff. I really appreciate your viewership and your support. You know I do. It means everything to me because it means that I get to share my knowledge and my experience and whatever I have to offer to all of this. I'm feeling my way through just like everybody else is. I wish I had some, you know, grand vision of the master plan or where everything was going or what everybody, you know, how it all was or something, or there was some way to, you know, to calm things down. But I don't know how to do that anymore. I just know how to do what I'm doing. And that's what I'm going to keep doing. And hopefully, in the process, we can get some people to, you know, kind of realize that there's just an awful lot of noise right now. And it's just really just so much nonsense. So, hopefully we can move on past this and keep getting the work done anyway. That's my goal. All right. Thanks, guys. And on that happy note, yes, I will let Tony know, and I'll see you guys. We'll have a show tomorrow with Tony. And then my plan Thursday. Okay, metering video Thursday. Got a lot of work to do between now and then because I haven't been working on it this last week. But that's the plan. So let's keep fingers crossed. Let's make this the week. Let's pull this thing off. And let's explain the e-meter. Let's do something fun. Yeah, I think so. Okay, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.